Welcome to another week at The Boundless Show. I'm your host, Lisa Anderson, and with me around the table, I have the Boundless family, Candace, Steve, Mott, and Ted. Hello.
Hello, Lisa.
Hello, Lisa.
Hey, great to have you here. As we head into this week's show, where we will be talking a little bit about voting, this is going to be our The Boundless edition of Get Out the Vote. So wait to hear from us on that. We'll be talking about some of the issues as they pertain to the family, and specifically young adults, things we think you need to know about. So we'll also be talking to Bebo Norman in this show, so stay tuned for that. He has a new album out. And then later on in the show, our inbox question is going to deal with choosing a church and or changing a church based on having your own demographic there and weighing in solid biblical preaching. Does one trump the other, and what do you do in light of that? Anyway, great show. But we are now heading towards the end of October, which means that Election Day is coming up. Someone shouted out Election Day, November.
Yay!
Not yay for Election Day. What day is Election Day for
November
those who don't know?
November 4th.
November 4th, yes. Okay, so Election Day, that does occur in all states, people. So make sure that you are paying attention to
for
that.
The United States, we do have some listeners.
For the United States.
Well, outside the United States.
And in some states, you can vote now.
Didn't we just have an election up in
and
Canada?
In some states, you vote twice.
Vote often.
Which means that all of our international listeners need to pray for us, for those
yes.
in the U.S.
Well, as we may have some international listeners who are just in the military or overseas and could send in an absentee ballot. Mm-hmm.
That's right.
Exactly. So how are you all feeling about the election at this point?
Well, I talked to my mom this morning and just really was reminded to be hopeful that God is still on the throne. He is sovereign and just very prayerful. It's driving me to my knees.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's good.
I'm going to do my duty and vote. I've done the research about the various, what are they called? Ballot initiatives?
Wow. Initiatives. Yeah. We have a lot of those.
A lot of those.
Mm-hmm. Candidates.
But I'm kind of disheartened by I feel like my vote's going to be diluted by a lot of fraudulent votes, frankly.
Hmm.
So,
that's an interesting... Well, when you hear that Mickey Mouse has voted like 37 times, it kind of makes you wonder.
Well, you know, it's a reminder, too, every election has its mixed bag. I mean, even when we've had some of the most disappointing election results, we typically have some bright points out there in terms of ballot initiatives or some really strong pro-family, pro-life candidates who were able to squeeze through, a difficult election season. And it's a reminder, especially, that even though all the attention is at the top of the ticket, that there are a lot of things down ticket on ballots. And, you know, a lot of people get caught off guard when they go into the booth or get their absentee ballot, and then they've got the couple of races they've heard the most ads about, and then all of a sudden they realize, what in the world do I do with all these other things, these judges and dog catchers and all that kind of business. And, you know, I think that's something to keep in mind, is to be prepared. And it's not always easy to get prepared. But, Mike, you were finding some mm-hmm. good sites for getting more informed about the rest of the ballot, weren't you?
Yeah, I'd first send our listeners to focusvoter.com, type in your name and address, and get a specific ballot for your district. You could also go to ballot.org. Just click on the state and get all the ballot initiatives and the proponents and opponents for each initiative. So that's a pretty informative site, too.
Well, that's really important, because I know in Colorado we've got just a long list of arcanely worded. I mean, you try to read these things and you're like, what are we voting for?
I go to this Catholic church to vote. I'm going to be standing there for 2 hours.
I'll give you my cheat sheet. I'll give you my cheat sheet, Lisa.
Oh, I've got my cheat sheet. You know it. For the judges, man. I never know what they're doing. So I have to do that.
But. Well, it's a good point on the judges. I mean, it's typically just retain them or let them go, right? It's a yes or no type vote. And so a lot of people don't know, you know, if this is a judge that was appointed by someone they agreed with or appointed, you know, in an earlier administration they disagreed with. And those are definitely the ones that you don't want to just say, I don't know, what's the best guess? Let's do all yeses. Some people I know just always do all noes and suspect that it's a good thing because so few judges are voted out. I mean, it's usually the exception for somebody to be voted out.
They treat it like the GRE when they don't know the answer.
Yeah, you just always go to the C circle or whatever.
So on the Boundless line, there's often you know, it almost comes to fisticuffs often on the life issue. And we've had people weigh in, you know, on different sides of that, and just kind of some who are what we've called in the past abortion fatigue, who just think that after 30 plus years, you know, we're just not moving ahead. And so why don't we just turn our attention to something else? What have you guys heard as far as the life issues? First of all, the ones that are playing out state specifically, and then two, just in general, what are we hearing on those and why are they important?
Well, first, let me weigh in on how I feel about the election. I get excited about elections always, and though they may not turn out how I expect or how I vote, I do enjoy becoming familiar with all the issues, all the ballot initiatives, and just having that voice. And knowing as a Christian that God is on the throne the next day, and knowing that He is sovereign and resting in that peace. So that allows me to get excited about the election. But to get to your specific question on life issues, there are a couple of initiatives this go around, one in South Dakota and one here in Colorado. The one in Colorado is Amendment 48, and it is to define fertilized egg as a person. And in South Dakota, it is a ban on all abortions. So those are two huge life issues this election.
You know, it's so sad, tragic, really, to me that some of our blog participants would talk about being fatigued by the issue, being fatigued by 36 weeks of pregnancy. I'm reminded of, you know, when you feel the baby inside you kicking and standing on your bladder and doing somersaults and headstands, it's hard to fool yourself into thinking it's just a blob of tissue or a product of conception or any of these other terms. And I think it suggests that the media has been fairly successful if a whole generation of upcoming Christian young people are thinking, oh, I'm tired of the issue. Mm-hmm. It's almost like they're reading from a secularist script that says you're tired of the issue. And
and it's easy to think too that it doesn't matter how you vote because things are status quo and you just might not make as much progress, when the reality is you really can slip backwards. And you know,
right, we could lose so much ground.
I mean, anybody who watches the Wilberforce movie realizes it's a long, hard fight, and there are times when you have to deal with setbacks, but you shouldn't be a party to those setbacks by making foolish decisions.
And it's not just that. I mean, individual congressmen and individual senators matter. Take, for example, Senator Brownback of Kansas. He introduced legislation last year that would allow women who are going in for an abortion to see an ultrasound. And that didn't get out of committee, but that is someone who is pro-life, who is a Christian, who has introduced legislation that would save the lives of babies, of preborn babies, because the statistics show that the majority of abortion-minded women who go in to receive counseling and view an ultrasound choose life.
Well, I think one of the dangers of feeling like the issue is just too old and too tiresome is we forget that a culture of life, a culture that esteems life in the womb, doesn't just esteem life in the womb. It esteems all life. It esteems children born with handicaps, and it esteems elderly people. Mm. And it recognizes that God gives us breath, and God numbers our days, and we're not in a position to say when it starts and when it ends. And I'm sure some of you listening have seen this CatholicVote.com website, the video. If you go to that site, it's the top item on the page. It is such a powerful reminder that life is, yes, about life in the womb, but it is about so much more than that, and it's just such a biblical message. God is the giver of life.
Yeah.
I think a lot of our blog commenters maybe tripped up by having an either-or mentality. You're either for preborn life or you're for postborn life and the quality of life, and I think we need to get into both and. We are concerned about both seeing a life not be snuffed out in abortion, and we can be concerned about quality of life. We can be both pro-quality of life and pro-life.
Right, right. Well, you're wanting not just to encourage the moms to have their babies, but then you want to encourage adoption, and you want to encourage all the other things that go with supporting then the woman who has conceived a child in a less than ideal situation.
Definitely.
I was just going to say, I'm just kind of tired of being maligned as a, you know, it's like when you talk about the life issue, all of a sudden you're a single issue voter and you're just an idiot because of that. And I had one of our elders at our church taught our Sunday school class several weeks ago, and he talked about the life issue being kind of the E at the top of the I chart. And And if you can't see that clearly, then everything else under it is going to be muddled as well.
Yeah,
and I just thought that was so true. I mean, because, yeah, you can't just put something off, you know, cordon it off into a little corner and be like, well, you know, hopefully we can save some life or support, you know.
So that's an E? That's an E at the top of the eye chart?
It is, Ted. Oh. It is. It's an E.
It's certainly, I think it's legitimate for it to affect your opinion of a candidate who is pro-choice or pro-abortion. If they don't have that right, if they don't have that...
It's such a fundamental benchmark.
I mean, why would you trust them on anything?
Well, think of it like this, too. There was an observation once about what things are actually being debated during presidential elections versus what issues ended up being so important during that election. I mean, you think back to 2000, anybody who watched the debates then, and you heard all this about the lockbox and Social Security and all these things. Well, that was all kind of swept away after 2001, after September 11th. And there are big things that happen. There are dramatic, larger issues. And we don't realize how often in the moment, the things that seem so important right around an election aren't as important as the unknowns, the things that are coming later.
That's right.
And
too,
if you think back in context of the life issue, I'm sure back in the 1860s, there were other marginal issues that were debated, but the union of the country and the slavery issues were the ones that transcended, even though they were probably messy and you probably had slavery fatigue, I mean, abolitionist fatigue or whatever back in the day. And we need to realize there are much larger issues that are going to transcend. And especially, I think, for our audience to keep in mind the reality that in the next 20, 30 years, we're going to have major train wrecks on fiscal issues related to Social Security and Medicare and things that just can't continue to exist the way they are because of the way boomers are retiring and things like that, that there are big generational issues at stake that really do transcend the small headlines that are right in front of us right now.
Well, I like the way Roberto E. Carlo Rivera puts it in a classic Boundless article. You take all those other issues. People who are living at least have the opportunity to better themselves, to better our government, to better our policies. The preborn baby who's killed doesn't have that.
Yeah.
So that's why he is a single issue voter.
Mm. Now, I tend to be fairly old school as far as voting itself. You know, I wait for the day of the election. I go down to the...
You get your sticker.
The little church. Yeah.
I want the sticker, too.
In person.
Yeah, that is so 20th century.
Part of that is because I think the vote will actually be counted that way and it won't get lost in the mail
or misdirected. And you can take your little girl in and have her help you do the lever. And
well, and like but me, I go and ways. I sit with the Catholic sisters. At the
there
Catholic
are other ways to vote. There's early voting. There's absentee ballots. What about... I don't know much about those.
Most of those have started. I mean... That's the growing trend. More and more states are doing early voting and have started most of them by this point.
They don't count them yet, or they don't release the results of early voting.
Presumably not.
Right, because you get to influence the vote. Right. But yeah, those are being collected and received.
I mean, wouldn't you say that currently, like the biggest... I mean, I think we should talk a couple minutes about getting out the vote. I mean, I saw the video now that Hollywood has put out, and it's like 5 minutes long, and it's just, you know... Every A-list celebrity basically saying, go vote if you care about the issues, if you care. And, you know, they kind of define the issues, and I think it's supposed to be nonpartisan. But anyway.
Well, and they push it, too, you know, because there's always this, I mean, ever since the voting amendment to extend the right to vote from 21 to 18, there's always been this hope that there's going to be this massive turnout of young voters. And every election, there tends to be disappointment that they just really didn't get out this time. And so I think for our listeners, it's this reminder that you've been given a privilege that a lot of people don't have, that people obviously have fought and died for. And now you got a stewardship responsibility. Now, I will say a lot of times those Hollywood-funded get-out-the-vote efforts, they might have a candidate in mind when they push that. And I think there are some expectations this year of how that youth vote will break. But I think for all of our listeners to realize they've got an opportunity to be at the other end of the election to be counted one way or the other and have people say, yeah, the youth vote made a difference. Well, let's see what kind of difference it does
make. But the youth vote registration is way down this year. That's what they're disappointed in is they had all these rallies and were, you know, I think a lot of younger people didn't realize they have to register to vote or something, you know, in most states. And so that's probably disappointing to some. But yeah, I think I'm all for just like busing people. I'm like, just find people that you think agree with you and just bus them there.
I think that's what happened
when I was in junior high and we had to get elected for class treasurer. You just walked people over there and made them vote for you.
That is one of the benefits to voting on election day, is that you do have a bit of that enthusiasm, excitement. You feel like you're part of something bigger than yourself, and you're you know, you run into your neighbor and you have the sticker and you say, did you go vote? And you remind them, and your neighbor goes, well, I forget, where do I go? And you give them directions. And when you're mailing your ballot 2 weeks ahead of time, you don't have that same day of excitement. And if I were not so pregnant, I would be voting on election day, because I love going to the polls and standing in line with the kids and talking about who we're going to vote for. And they're trying to evangelize people in line. And
you remember the Iraq pictures of the people walking around with the colored fingers because they had to do
the
fingerprinting. And, you know, you would hope we can still have some of that patriotism and excitement about having the privilege. And
I like the way the kids boil it down. The good guys and the bad guys.
Black hats and white hats. It's really fun to vote with kids because they just are so inspired by it. So
it is. It's kind of like it can be kind of the Super Bowl of, you know, the fall.
There you go.
The Super Bowl. Yeah.
But you know what?
But then at the end of the day, you have to teach them the scripture about praying for whoever wins.
That's right.
Because we do have a responsibility.
It is easy to think with the Super Bowl. I mean, there's a lot of disappointment after the Super Bowl. And I was just trading some comments with friends about the election and saying it is easy to feel like, you know, your team lost if you know, based on how the election goes. And then to start thinking, but not only did they lose, but there's not next week or there's not next season. I mean, it's a lot of times 4 more years or 6 more years or whatever. And you start thinking, and it's one thing for your team to lose, but it's not like you put someone in power and they can make all kinds of bad decisions. But that's when we really need to rest in the fact that God is sovereign, and that regardless of who wins, we're then responsible for praying for those who are in authority, that we are supposed to wake up the next day and say, God, these are the leaders we have now, and
we pray that
they'll be led by you regardless of what's driving
them. I mean, the book of Daniel is clear that God raises up kings and he deposes them. So blessed be the name of the Lord, you know.
We will be generating quite a bit of enthusiasm here at Focus on the Family. Many of us will be here on election night to track the races in many of the different states and to report on them. You can follow what's happening nationally as well as in your own area, we hope, by going to citizenlink.com. And we will be filing reports and, like I said, tracking all the races. And hopefully you can follow that along with us and see what's happening and get excited or not get excited based on where you are. So, but either way, being prayerful about that. And again, as I opened up, those of you who are not American USA voters, please do be in prayer for this because it's a huge marker, I think, in our nation's history. So we're looking forward to it, hopefully.
Can I come close to you? Hold your heart and never move. I'll never move. Well, I can't be anything I'm not. You get what you see, but I'm gonna give you everything I got. I'm not living in the in between. I'm not living.
For this week's culture segment, I have with me in the studio Bebo Norman. Many of you are familiar with him as a CCM artist extraordinaire.
Extraordinaire.
Yes.
For sure.
And I actually have, I'm going to just put this out there and just shame you, because I've actually met you once before. I met you at Gospel Music Week in Nashville.
Very cool.
Maybe a couple of years ago, can't quite remember, but it was just that big mass of flesh, the meet and greet.
See,
in
you're fully shaming me.
I am.
Because you said nice to meet you when we walked in just a minute ago, and I thought,
I know. I was just trying to put on that veneer of
right,
we never met,
exactly.
So you wouldn't feel bad. But
right, thank you.
Okay. But I was about...
You just put on the veneer when we were in private, and then when we're doing the interview,
exactly.
You're like, you want to shame me.
I was
me.
Number 427 of the people that you met in that hour and a half,
okay,
so I wouldn't worry about that.
Oh, you're talking about that big mass. Yeah, where you're
just signing photographs
or
whatever.
That is a crazy
you
one.
You just put on the PR glaze, and we're like,
well, it's great to see you again.
I know. Well, here we are. So on my turf, so
right.
That's good. So welcome.
Thank you very much.
Colorado.
Thanks for having me. I love Colorado and have spent a good bit of time here in my life. So it's in a weird way, kind of coming home for me.
Good. Do you do any like skiing or hiking or
rafting? Yeah, well,
or...
I guided backpacking trips for a couple of years out here. I did that for two seasons right around the end of college for me, and just, I mean, couldn't have loved it more. It was a beautiful experience, and so it sort of it kind of hooked me then. But I've spent a lot of time. I also kayak, a whitewater kayak, and so. Sort of the, in fact, the very first river that I ever ran was in Fort Collins. So it's home to me in a lot of ways. So
oh, that's
I love
good.
It.
We'll give yeah. you credit for that.
Thank
that's
you. I'm good. Feeling, I'm feeling so, like you're impressed.
Now you're
current,
but you're currently residing
in Nashville. Tennessee.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So where most people do, although I was a little shocked. We had Brandon Heath here a few weeks ago.
Yeah. He moved.
Lives, yeah. Down in Texas.
And what's funny is that he actually is from Nashville. Mm-hmm. So nobody's from Nashville.
Right.
But Brandon is, but now he doesn't live there.
Right. So,
Brandon and I, we've toured together quite a bit too. He's an old friend of mine. Long before he was playing music, we were friends. So
yeah,
it's pretty fun.
That's good. He's a cool.
He's not
cool
nearly guy. As cool as I am, but he's actually a pretty nice guy. So,
okay. Yeah. Yeah. I did actually send him an email just telling him, you know, thanks for doing the show and
right.
kind of gave him a heads up, you know, that we'll let him know when the link comes out. And he didn't even respond.
Yeah, he's that way.
I'm thinking we may not even run his interview.
I think that'd probably be a wise move. He's real prima donna mm-hmm. that way. So
I kind of got that vibe.
Yeah, he's actually one of the sweetest guys in the world. Yeah. I feel like I've now got to you know.
Defend him?
Yeah,
don't.
For some reason. No. Mm-hmm. Actually, I don't like him at all.
Because mm-hmm. you know what? The Lord is our defender.
Yes,
and we'll just okay, before I spiritualize anything else inappropriately, right. and our producer looks over at me, in addition to doing Colorado outdoor sports and dissing fellow artists,
yes.
Bevo Norman
yes.
also does music.
I do.
That is fantastic. And actually has a new album that is so aptly and so creatively titled...
Bebo Norman.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah,
wow.
Go figure. My seventh record, and it's my first self-titled record. It doesn't make sense, does it?
That doesn't, no.
No,
that's
it's
a
odd.
Little cart before the horse.
Yeah, a little bit. It's kind of... I just, you know, it's kind of an ego thing,
okay.
really. You know, I was like, why would I put the name? I'm just kidding. No, the reality is that it is an odd thing to have a self-titled record this far into my career playing music. But mm-hmm. I think considering the nature of the last however many years, number of years and kind of things going on in my own life. And I've, you know, I'm on a new record label. This is a new record label for me for the first time on this record. And, mm-hmm. Just a lot of, kind of poignant things for me personally that sort of affected these songs, this mm-hmm. group of songs.
You're kind of saying, I know you say, or reading some of your stuff, it said it's kind of a time of new beginnings.
Yeah.
So just describe really where this transition's coming from.
Well, I mean,
where we are with it.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely, there's a lot to that. I mean, you can look at it on multiple levels from, you know, being married in the last 4 or 5 years and having a child in the last year and a half, which is all brand new to me, obviously. I mean, I was single till I was 30 and along with just a lot of things in my life that have happened over the last number of years in terms of sort of making me stop a little bit and take a sort of reassessment. I think we all probably do that from time to time in our lives, but for me, it's been a pretty dramatic, series of events where I just kind of had to step back and take a look at some of the things in my life, even music, and say, you know, music has been something that has been such a beautiful experience, and it just keeps going, and that shocks me every year that I get to keep playing music. It's my 13th year playing music now, and but I had to kind of stop myself a couple of years ago and just sort of God sort of stopped me, to be honest, and sort of forced me to take a look at really where I was drawing life from. And in a lot of ways, I think for a number of years, I probably drew life in an unhealthy way from how people responded to my music and how people responded to me in light of that. And just music in general, there was a lot of my identity that sort of became wrapped up in that. And it's been through the process of getting married and even now having a kid, but really through the process of just digging into some relationships in my life and community there in Nashville. I think it's all been sort of redefined for me. This idea that I really still love doing what I do and I still am thankful to get to do it. But it really isn't the source of life for me anymore. And I've begun to kind of realize that God has sort of reshaped that for me into just this small handful of people in my life that really, God probably uses them more than anything else in my life to really speak to me and teach me. And that little small community has kind of become a pretty dramatic thing for me. All that said, this record sort of speaks to that theme in a lot of ways. I almost called the record Ruins, which is a sort of a dark and sad title, but it's the name of a song on the record. But there's a line in the song that really is the point. And the line says, "Let my ruins become the ground you build upon. Let my ruins become the start. Let my ruins become the ground you're building on from what's left of my broken heart." And every song, I didn't plan it this way, but obviously this is just where my life is right now. Every song speaks to that on some level or another. And so this idea of it being a new beginning, this idea of it being kind of a big, deep breath is really what these last couple of years have been for me. And so because of that, it kind of made sense to go with a self-titled thing, because it really is kind of a new identity in a lot of ways, and sort of, I think, correcting where my identity is based, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, let's talk a little bit about a couple of the themes that are on the album, because they're pretty much born out of not only personal experience, but maybe some things that are going on in the culture and some of your concerns with that. So what prompted you to write about those?
You know, I've never really known how to write songs unless I was writing them out of my own personal experience. And so, I mean, every single song on the record is written from a specific story, a specific moment in my own journey, you know? And so, I mean, there are very intimate songs, I mean, that are written from specific moments in my life. And then songs that may even appear to me more culturally based songs, but they are also written from specific moments in my life. There's a song that we talked about a minute before we started recording, a song called Brittany that's obviously on some levels pretty culturally based. And even that song really came out of a certain personal experience in a particular moment for me. And so they all come from that place for me. I don't know really how to write any other way. So...
And so what, you know, describe for our for those out there who, you know, may or may not have or are interested in that song, what are you actually saying in that song?
Well, I mean, with the song Britney specifically, I mean, the first question anybody ever asks is it a song about Britney Spears? And because especially when you hear the song, and the strange thing is...
And will you in your video be dressed as a Catholic schoolgirl? That's what we need to know.
In fact, in all of my videos, I'm dressed as a Catholic schoolgirl. So that's just kind of the way it works.
Kind of the trend. Okay.
No. Well, you know, it's really funny because, to be honest with you, that song, I mean, it's one of those songs that really caught me off guard. I certainly had no plans to write a song about Britney Spears, and I certainly had no plans to... even record it once I did write it, honestly, because it was this weird moment. I was up late one night and I couldn't sleep and was kind of flipping through the news channels. And I, landed on this news story about Britney Spears. It was one of the ones that she was getting taken away on a stretcher from her home or something like that. And to be honest, my first reaction, was just really cynical and really just kind of, and shamefully so, was pretty, harsh, in that I just felt like my first thought was, you know, here we go again. When does this end? You know, when does this saga get finished? And then there was this moment, and I don't know where this came from, but there was this moment where the camera sort of zoomed in and sort of froze for a minute on this look on her face. And there was this odd moment where this look was just complete and utter despair and brokenness and really kind of confusion even more than anything else. And I don't know why, but for some odd reason, it absolutely paralyzed me in that moment, just the look on her face. And I think partly it was because I recognized that look, because I feel like I've had that look on my face in my life and in some pretty dark moments in my life. And I think it's partly because there was just some part of me that just thought, for some reason, she's a child of God. She was created by God, and she has had everything that this world could give her, and she is completely lost in it, completely confused and broken by it. And there was, for some reason, some odd moment where I think I looked at, instead of seeing a tabloid story, I think for the first time I looked at her life with compassion. And I feel so shameful for the fact that as a believer, that's the first time I really looked at her life with compassion, but I really did. Mm-hmm. And I think for the part of the reason for that for me was because I imagined myself, because I've been there, maybe different circumstances, but I've been in a moment where the look was on my face. And I imagined what Jesus would say to me in that moment, because this world had beat me up on some level. And not taking away from my own bad judgments and bad decisions, or Britney Spears' bad judgments and bad decisions, but the world can beat us up, and it does. And I just imagined what Jesus would say to me in that moment, which would probably sound something like, I'm sorry for what this world has done, but I'm here. And that means hope is here. And for some reason or another, it just, that song flooded out of me. The first line in the song is, I'm sorry for the lies we told, that we sell the beauty but destroy the girl. And what our culture does, and the lies that our culture says and tells young girls these days about where beauty, where life comes from, what beauty is, all of those things, it just became really, it just kind of poured out. The song was written really quickly, and it was about 20 minutes long. I just couldn't quit thinking of things to apologize for. Mm-hmm. Again, not saying that we're not responsible for our own decisions, but I think it was, again, this moment where I really saw her through the eyes of Jesus for the first time, and on a broader level, really saw what our culture can do to young girls these days. And mm-hmm. And it just really affected me. So I felt really proud to actually get to be a part of that song when it all... The truth is, I didn't play it for anybody for about 3 months, because, again, I didn't know what to do. Who writes a song about Britney Spears? I didn't know what to do with it. And it ended up... I played it for a friend of mine, and he said, man, I just feel like our culture, and especially the church, who, if not the church, should respond with compassion. Mm-hmm. And he said, I feel like we need to hear it. So we recorded it.
So if you were sitting next to her on a plane, for example, how would you communicate hope to her, do you think, Bebo? And then ultimately, you know, really, for these girls that are growing up in our culture, what do we need to be saying, and how do we need to be modeling this?
I think that's probably the biggest dilemma of it, is how do you really communicate it in a moment where you have the words to say, or have an opportunity to say words? But I feel like I would, especially to young girls, and even to Britney. I mean, I don't know her, and we're not, you know, I haven't listened to tons of her music. I obviously know what I see on the news and things like that. But I feel like I know her in the sense that I know a lot of people that are in similar circumstances, again, that may look a little bit different. But I feel like the thing that we have to begin to communicate is you can even, and you can see it over and over and over in my life. You can see it over and over, especially in lives that are lived out on TV and in the news and in tabloids. There's Britney Spears was given every accolade that this world could give her, every single thing. And yet found herself in a place where she had no idea, in that moment, even when I saw it on the news, what life was, or where she was, even there was a complete and utter despair. And I would just say especially to young girls and even to her, I would just ask the question, you know, where does that take us? Where does that pursuit of life, as culture says it should be, where has it taken us, and what does it look like? Because when you see it lived out on TV, and really when you see it lived out in our own lives, it can end up being a pretty desperate and empty place. And that's just the beginning of it, because there's no way to make somebody understand that, okay, if you can make somebody understand that's not where life comes from, which I think is pretty easy to say. You can look at people that are wealthy, people that have everything, again, that the world can throw at them, that are miserable, and you can say, you know, life doesn't really come from those things. But the question becomes, how do you communicate to somebody that life does indeed come from Christ himself, and that hope ultimately lies in that? And I don't know that you can communicate that in a simple conversation. I think sometimes that's our problem as the church, is that we try to sum it up in a Cliff's Notes version and say, okay, here are the 12 steps. This is how you live life, and this is the solution. Mm-hmm. But the reality for me is that I think the only way that can ultimately be seen is through living life with people. Mm-hmm. And again, it goes back to that community of people in my own life, that handful. It's a small handful. I don't care how many millions of people you know or play music for, or how few people you know. All of our lives come down to just a little small group of people really that really know us. And to me, that's where the hope of Christ is ultimately communicated the most effectively. So I don't know if I could sit on an airplane next to somebody and be able to tell them in a 1 hour plane ride or 2 hour plane ride, this is it. I could say the words, but I think that it's about living life with people and being in a community of people and the people on our right and our left. How do we love those people and how are we loved by those people? That really communicates what the hope of Christ is.
Mm-hmm. I think too, just sharing from our own lives is helpful and communicating some of that. And I think living in community and being willing to do that, I think even with my neighbors, because I think I so often have to come up with some grand speech for them about, you know, the fact that I get past the hurdle of, oh, I work at Focus on the Family,
right,
and everything else,
right,
so they don't hate me.
Right.
But I think in that struggle, you know, there's just some reality and realness in that. Now, you are not yourself without struggle.
Right.
You also have dealt with anxiety and mm-hmm. the pressures of that. Where are you in that right now?
Well, you know, I mean, one of the songs on the record is called Pull Me Out, and it's written specifically kind of from that. And I think that I really, I've always prided myself on some level as being able to logic my way through most everything. You know, I have a degree in biology and chemistry, big deal from college. It's helping me out a lot at this point in my life. But but in that, with that scientific sort of mindset, I figure you can reason your way through most anything. And the truth is you kind of can. There's a sort of common sense approach to life that kind of, things are really a lot simpler than we make them a lot of times. But this whole struggle with anxiety that has recently even been diagnosed as anxiety, For years, I didn't really know what it was. And for years, I attempted to logic my way through it. And it was the first thing ever in my life that I hit that I had no ability to reason my way through. And it scared me to death. And it honestly kind of paralyzed me. I spent years kind of going, okay, I can fix this. This is what I need to do. I'll do this and I'll try that. And if this doesn't work, then maybe I'll try that. And I literally spent years trying, and all this is kind of focused, oddly enough, around singing and playing songs. And so it's such an odd thing for something that I've done for so long and feel so comfortable doing to all of a sudden become this thing that I can't control. And maybe control is the word. That's what I wanted to do, was to be able to control it. And the process for me began, the real moment where it began to sort of, I guess the healing began, was the first moment where I said to some of that handful of people in my life, some of those people in my community, I'm not okay. Like this isn't okay. I would talk to them about it in light at certain times and say, this is going on, but I've kind of thinking this might help it. And I've kind of got a handle on it from this angle. But the first time where I really kind of said, I'm not all right here. You know, I don't have a solution and I don't see a solution. God really began to sort of unravel things for me in a healthy way at that point, and set me in front of people who had so much more knowledge and wisdom on how to deal with something like that I did not. I don't have that capacity or that life experience. And that was the beginning of the process of beginning to sort of shape this, I guess, this healing process that kind of came out of that. So it has been a dark struggle for me in a lot of ways, and a lot of shame, a lot of, just feeling guilty, or not guilty, but feeling shameful of this feeling not right in a lot of ways. And man, it's been freeing though to get to that place where I've begun to sort of come out of that a little bit.
Hmm. Wow. Okay, we can find out more about Bebo Norman's music and life at bebonorman.com. Make sure that you do check that out. Of course, we will be highlighting him at boundless.org as well. So you want to make sure you check that out. Now, I can't let you go, Bebo, without addressing the fact that you were, in fact, married at 30.
Yes, indeed.
Okay, so because we are a podcast that addresses mostly singles in their 20s and 30s,
right,
how, just tell us quickly how you found your wife, and did you get any grief like in your 20s about being single and just kind of obviously just bumming around and not doing anything with your life?
Yeah.
You know what I mean,
it was the boundless, the limitless question was, you know, when are you going to start your life, you know?
Well, and it's obviously because you weren't reading boundless.org.
Obviously.
Had you would have been married much earlier.
Sooner, because isn't that really the point of reading boundless.org?
But fortunately, God has grace. So, right. Yeah. So tell us about that.
You know, I think I spent a lot of years sort of struggling with the loneliness and the idea of, because I always felt like I was built for marriage on some level, but or wanted to share that. But I fought a lot of shame even in that. You know, that idea that, man, I'm single and traveling around, I meet all these great people, but whatever. But I think that there was a point where I kind of began to realize that I feel like we spend so much time culturally looking at what's coming next, and we keep telling people, yeah, but when you're in school, you're in junior high, you're going to get to high school, and then when you're in high school, you're going to go to college, and then when you get out of college, you're going to start your career, and then when you start your career, you're going to get married, and we're always talking about what we're building towards. And I feel like everything that I can find in scripture about life is that it's not about what's coming next. I feel like we're missing the point when we quit looking at, I feel like we can really live life when we start looking at life as right this moment and what do we do in it. And once I kind of landed in that, I found a lot of joy in being single, in all honesty. And really, I wasn't ready to be married a day before I was 30. In terms of what God was teaching me and showing me, if I would have been married in my mid-20s, my wife was in her mid-20s when we got married, and she was in a place where it made sense. If I would have been married a day sooner than 30, I would have destroyed it. I mean, I was that guy. I was an idiot, and still am on a lot of levels. But it was a process that for me, now looking back, was so timely and beautiful that I can't even think about it making sense any other way for me.
Hmm. Yeah. All right. Wow, interesting.
That's about as short an answer as I can give you.
That is good.
I apologize. That's good, so. I see 23 minutes going now.
All right. Well, again, we want to encourage you all to check out bebonorman.com. That's BEBONORMAN.com. And make sure that you get the latest info. Make sure that you stay tuned here at boundless.org and check in here on the podcast for more info that we will have about him. And of course, when we lure him back to Colorado, when he's not backpacking or whatever,
right.
We'll have him stop by the studios again, and maybe next time when I go to Gospel Music Week, he'll remember who I am.
Yes, you know, if you're in that line, you won't be in that. We need to do an interview when you come back to GMA.
Yeah,
and then I'll for sure come. I'd love to come back by when I'm in Colorado. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. So, all right, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you. Have a good one.
Tell me now, when does this start feeling like I understand everything I'm dealing with? First I was young, now it's all just happening. And what about the way I said that made you turn around and shake your head like I don't even know what I'm asking for? But this could be all about just letting.
Hey, Mott?
Yeah?
Where'd Lisa go?
I don't know.
She's supposed to be introducing the Hunger Years right now.
I know, but she's not here.
Well, could you do it?
Well, sure. Who's doing it this week?
It's Patrick.
Patrick. Oh, it'll be good then.
Go ahead and give it a shot.
Oh, okay. in this week's Hungry Years, Patrick Dunn,
discusses everybody's favorite memory, the college car.
Your head is down. Waves of stress grip your body. There's a rock in your stomach. All the what-if questions race through your mind, and finally you plead in prayer, "Please, God, just let it start one more time." The college and post-college years are often characterized by asking questions about faith, seeking answers, delving into philosophy, theology, and apologetics on a quest to truly know God. But really, nothing builds your faith, leads you to desperation, and gives you glimpses into God's grace like the college car. You've been there. I've been there. The car that falls under the category of "it's all I could afford," or "my dad gave it to me. He used to drive it in the 80s. Or even, "I traded a guy a sack of avocados for it." You know, the dash is cracked, the seat, if you have one, is worn, doesn't slide back and forth, and instantly it gives you the spine of a 90-year-old, and it runs, well, you hope it runs. My college car was a 1976 Toyota Celica. I fondly recall the days it stopped dead right in the middle of the road, or when the headliner fell and I drove a motorized circus tent. But see, that's the beauty of it. Forget studying Brother Andrew and listening to those Ravi Zacharias debates. Just drive your way to spiritual enlightenment and maturity. You see, the college car teaches you so many things. It teaches you to overcome fear. "I hope nothing else breaks" is slowly replaced with joyous laughter as the window stops rolling up or down, a speaker shorts out, or you whistle a happy tune to block out the new noise coming from under the hood. And you're taught perseverance, too. Winters when the defroster breaks, hours lost waiting for the tow truck. You know, I actually spent a summer in Tucson, where basically people put on sweatshirts if it drops below triple digits, and the air conditioner broke in my car. I'm writing a book about it now. It's called 90 Days of Dampness. You know, God uses your college car to build discernment. Do you fix that, or do you let it slide? Do you go to a regular shop, or is this the time you finally use that guy your friend knows who tints windows and got his mom's mower running? By the way, a lot of guys learn discernment through trying to trick out their college car. Bad car plus limited budget equals lesson learned. Maybe I shouldn't have put a spoiler on the station wagon. The college car also builds humility as you swallow pride and learn to ask for help from strangers, or when you give a ride to friends, or when it comes to that first date. "What's that smell? Is there a forest fire?" "Oh, yeah, I have a fuel leak. I thought the Pine air freshener would cover it up." I remember my first date with Sally. As I drove her home and the speedometer cable started screeching the whole way down the freeway. And this was while the oil pressure warning light blinked and buzzed. Seriously, I was humiliated. But on the bright side, exposure to constant high-pitched noise has allowed me to communicate with finches. Now, once you've decided, "That's enough, I've had it," God really uses your car. Now you're thrust into the fiery furnace of temptation. "I could get this car at only 5% interest." Or, "I deserve something better now. I made it through a year of political science." Will you give in? Or will you also learn another lesson? Contentment. Maybe you're one of the chosen few who avoided the valley of the college car. And you're surrounded by plush heated seats, a soothing GPS voice, and a cup holder that's actually more than a plastic accessory hung on the passenger window. Well, you can still build a powerful prayer ministry for the less fortunate, or even offer rides. God can use a neighbor's college car to mold and make you. I know, I've been there. You may be weary of sudden stalls, of stepping on it, yet mysteriously slowing down. Of wondering, "How will I pay for a transmission?" But know that God has a plan for you and your college car. And every morning, you get in, stare through that crack in the windshield, and trust that when you turn the key, you'll hear a happy sound. Know that you're on the road to building faith that overcomes exhaust leaks, missing hubcaps, and flickering dash lights. Jesus, take the wheel.
Remember the time when I thought of letting go and taking back my hand, when all I could think was how long can I follow you, and where do I stand in this world? I lost my faith, my reason to believe, when I refused to see. Oh Lord, you carried me in, and just like a soldier, you battled for my soul. But more like a father, you come and take me home. Yeah.
Opening today's inbox, we have a question on church from Sheila, and I have with me in the studio again Mott and Ted to address her question. Welcome, guys.
Thanks, Lisa. It's been
a while
since I've been in one of these things.
Well, good. We thought we'd give you another chance, you know, welcome back. It's good. Okay, here is what Sheila is asking. She says, I have attended a large church for the past 5 years, and I joined primarily because they had a Sunday school class for 20-somethings, and the teacher of the class is very solid. However, I attend two different services at the church and have not been totally content with the content. I am so hungry for solid preaching from the Word and expositional teaching. My dilemma is that many churches in the area do not offer anything for 20-something singles. Should I stay where I am because there's a class for my age, or should I join another church with more solid preaching?
Go ahead, Mott.
Wow, that's a great question. I just think it's interesting that she's sort of pitting good teaching versus community, that it's difficult to find both, and I resonate with that. It is difficult to find a church that both provides the community you're looking for of peers with solid expositional preaching. So I do want to affirm her desire to be challenged and to sit under expositional teaching. And I appreciate her asking the question, because it is a serious question, leaving a church. And just based on her question, maybe it's fluff teaching or not going as deep as she wants. So I think it's great that she's taking this seriously, and it's a great discussion to have. Having said all that, I would ask her to carefully consider the teaching that's going on from the pulpit. If it is heresy, yeah, I mean, I think those are legitimate grounds for leaving. If it's just not going deep enough, I think that she has a couple of things that she could do. She says that the Sunday school teaching is solid, which is great. Praise God for that. If she's wanting deeper teaching from the pulpit, if it's not heresy, she could supplement that by going online, getting some expositional teaching there. But I would just, I think leaving a church is a big deal and should not be taken lightly. So I would just ask her to talk to some mature Christian friends, some mentors that she has, and go over these issues with them.
Yeah, I think you took a lot of my thunder there, Mott. But I'd like to add that church is more than just preaching. It's the community, as she recognizes. It's not just receiving, but how she can participate. She didn't mention how she participates, whether she's involved with outreach ministries or if she's involved with teaching herself. So I guess I would tend to counsel, you know, don't leave right now until you've maybe gotten more involved with participating in all that there is to do here at this church.
Yeah,
I think it's notable that she mentions that they've got a good 20-somethings group. To be frank, somebody who's in their 20s, if she's marriage-minded, might be a great place to meet that man, you know? There's nothing wrong with using your church to find a good spouse,
mm-hmm.
you know? Even if the preaching doesn't measure up to your expectations.
Yeah, I think it's a good opportunity for self-examination, like you were saying, Ted. What is she doing to be involved in the church? How is she affecting the church? Mm. And not come at it, not that she is, but from a consumer mentality. So I think there's an opportunity there, too.
Yeah, I think those are good thoughts. I think looking at, if you're really weighing expositional preaching or the content of the preaching against a 20-something singles community, that's a little bit concerning to me. I mean, hopefully there are other reasons she's in the church, and you guys both alluded to that, you know, that you are, Sheila, becoming involved in your church and really seeing it as a church body and a community where you are receiving support and accountability, where you're receiving mentorship in many different things, and it really is becoming the body of Christ for you. I think that's important. I will say, you know, I mean, if you're in the community, these 20-something singles, I mean, are these guys hot? I mean, that is a reason. I mean, that then it's a more serious consideration, because then you have something to pursue. No, I'm totally joking. The guys are laughing at me. Totally joking about that. But I think it is valuable what they just said about, sure, you want to be where you can get to know people your own age, and church is a great place to do that, especially if you are marriage-minded. But I think just in summarizing, a lot of these points were good, that you can supplement teaching with online stuff. The only thing I would caution when you were talking about your pastor in specifically is, I know I've gotten into the trap before of getting kind of snobby about style. Mm. And, you know, if it's just good. Simple, if it's presented simply, or it's just a different style than you're used to, maybe give that some time and get used to it and, you know, see how it plays out. You know, obviously, if it is heresy or if it is just really dumbed down, or it's just, you know, Jesus is my buddy, or, you know, showing movie clips every week and then trying to draw something out of it.
Sure, Lisa. Now, sketchy. Something you just said made me wonder if perhaps she's coming to disrespect her pastor, her mm-hmm. preaching pastor, if because his preaching isn't up to her expectations or up to so-and-so's expositional preaching, perhaps she's developing a lower estimation of his pastoral ability, and that can be a little dangerous.
Well, and that's what I'm saying. That's the right. I've fallen into that before. So then every Sunday I go in and I'm just like, this isn't going to hit it.
That's a
good
caution.
So then I expect it to be bad, and I just go in with a bad attitude. And that's something that you really have to be prayerful about and be, you know, caution yourself against, because that could be kind of toxic. So, so I thought these were good thoughts, you guys. So thanks for weighing in. Sheila, let us know how it goes. Let us know if you decide to stay, and just the questions that you go through to determine further whether or not this is the church for you. And, you know, if you need ideas of places to go online to find good preaching, we'd love to weigh in on that as well. And if you do like meet a hot guy in the singles group, let us know that as well. So the rest of you, please write to us at editor@boundless.org, or as you well know, you can now call us and leave us a message at 1-866-687-8686. We would be happy to address your question or your concern or your kudos. So, you know, we just want to hear some feedback from you, because that's what makes the shows. So we will look forward to that. Ted and Mott and I will go and make sure that we too are getting good preaching. That is it for this week's show. I'm your host, Lisa Anderson. Until next time, we'll see you around.
The Boundless Show is a production of Boundless.org. Focus on the family.